This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall on ABC Radio.
How much road experience has been lost in the past 2 years for L and P plate drivers? We've had 8 and 9pm curfews, we've had travel limits of between 5 and 20k radiuses, and certainly no long road trips or time spent on busy freeways. So, Rish, what happens when lockdown lifts?
I don't know about you, Jono, but when you spend long periods of time not driving, and even if you've been driving for decades, you get back into the car and you kind of feel like you've forgotten how to do it. So when you add young drivers to that, and especially given that it will be holiday, Christmas, festival time when young people want to get out and about. And also, just one example, P-platers who maybe got their P's 2 years ago, barely had any road experience for all the reasons you just listed. When we reopen again, they're actually going to be allowed to have more people in the car and more freedoms, yet not a lot of experience.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about this summer season coming into to Christmas, but we have got some surprising and kind of troubling data from the TAC, the Transport Accident Commission, showing the number of young Victorians who've died on our roads compared with the equivalent period last year is up 300% for ages 16 and 17, 40% for 18 to 25-year-olds, and 17% for those in the 21 to 25 age group.
Yeah, they're really awful figures and quite strange given that we actually haven't been driving. So what happens when we open up in just a few weeks? What can we expect when our young people hit the roads again, perhaps for the first time in a very long time when they just haven't been behind the wheel of a car? Today we're looking at how do we safely reintroduce young drivers back onto the road?
How can young drivers be part of the roadmap out of lockdown? Should we be looking at longer probation periods? Should there be subsidised driving lessons or hazard lessons?
So as a young person, how much have you driven over the last 2 years? And do we need to make changes to keep young people safe on the roads?
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
Brad Crofts is the CEO of Fit to Drive. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm all right. How can we make it so that we don't have a horrible summer of young people losing their lives on our roads?
Well, it's a really important question, and I think a timely one, and one that was raised by the Minister for Road Safety, the Australasian Road Safety Conference back on the 28th of September, who was conscious of this within the context of us not only returning to our schools and workplaces, but also to our roads. And the challenge being with, as you've indicated in your introduction, the amount of time lost in terms of generating experience, becoming more aware, you know, as a vulnerable group of people, young drivers and young passengers, to become more confident and to become, you know, more aware in terms of the kinds of risks that are, you know, that we know are on our roads and that our safe system approach, you know, tries to adjust to in relation to what we invest in terms of our better, you know, roads and the money that we and time we spend in terms of the quality of our cars and the, you know, enforcement of speed. There's also that safe people element, and that's what we do. That's what we think about at Fit to Drive. Also relevant to your introduction was the point that there may be a short-term spike in terms of lives lost. Potentially, the numbers move around, right? We're not talking about huge quantums in terms of the increase, particularly if you take it over a 5-year average. But what we thought interesting was coming out of that Connecticut study that was referred to in the article was that despite the fact that there had been the lockdown announced in Connecticut, and despite the fact that crashes overall did decline, as along did miles travelled, vehicle miles travelled, there was actually a significant increase in both single vehicle crashes and a significant increase in single vehicle fatalities. It seems counterintuitive, right? If you don't have the same capacities to be able to travel, as you mentioned earlier, and the roads are clearer, well then, you know, how come? But it would appear to be that there's been some kind of behavioural adjustment by drivers to take advantage of the clearer roads, to take advantage of the fact that there isn't the same, perhaps, law enforcement occurring because of the reduced amount of traffic on the roads, and consequently greater speed. And as a result of that, more accidents and fatalities, sadly.
Well, Peter in South Bank has sent a text and agrees with you. He says young driver deaths are up because the young are stealing cars, joyriding and crashing. That says Peter. But we live, and whether or not that's true is yet to be determined.
Well, that's one assessment. Well, not all young people are stealing cars and crashing them.
No, of course not. But it is interesting of a night now when you hear someone out on the road, because everything is shut down sort of from 9 p.m. We got very used to in society just hearing people out driving, and you would be able to hear if someone was driving erratically. But now even just hearing a car late at night, I'm like Mrs. Mangle, you know, at neighbours out of the window looking at who's driving beyond 9 o'clock.
Right.
Brad Crofts is with you. He's the CEO of Fit to Drive. Let's have a chat to Kate. She's called from Kilmore. Hi, Kate.
Hi, how are you going?
Good.
I'm just very concerned. I've got a learner driver at the moment, and he's had his life of learners for about a year now, and it is virtually impossible to get him hours. He has to do 120 before he attempts to go for his P plates. And learning to drive a car is not one of the 6 reasons or the 5 reasons to leave home at the moment. So I'm sure I'm not alone.
But no, I don't think you
are. Get their experience on the roads. And, it's just trying to grab little bits here and there when we're legally allowed to leave the house.
Yeah, and then once you're out of lockdown, are you planning to just go into a kind of an intensive learning to drive phase?
Oh, no, well, at the moment he's fortunately year 12, so he's allowed back to school, and he goes to school a long way from home. So we're getting up super early at the moment, and he's driving himself to school, but
that's the thing when we're learning, we try and put ourselves and those that we're teaching as well in all sorts of situations. So whether it be freeways or at night or when it's raining or longer drives. So just not having any of those types of experiences either, Kate.
Yep, and I think it's just opening us up for trouble, like when these kids are all getting their license, because they're not really going to have a very wide variety of practice when they get on the roads on their own.
Yeah, well, that's a concern that I'm sharing as well. Kate, and you're in Kilmore, so you're right near the Hume Freeway. Has he been able to get onto the freeway yet?
Well, the last couple of days, because he's been back at school in North Melbourne, I figure that's a legitimate reason to leave home if he's going to school. So he's been driving on the Hume and the Ring Road, which has been a bit scary, but he did handle it really well.
Oh, good on him that first time. Take the really long way to get to school. That's one way, isn't it? Kate, thank you. Brad, you would have been kind of nodding along there, listening to Kate in Kilmore.
Yeah, totally. And I really, really get that, being a parent myself to a young driver. And, my son's 25, but, I mean, I take the time to remind him in the context of, just not having recent driving experience. To be really aware, to be vigilant, and also that goes for the people in his car as well, passengers, and if at any stage they feel unsafe, just please stop. No one will judge you who counts in your life to just stop and take charge, because we want them to go safe and come home safe. And I think just responding to that point that the kids are looking to get out, and assuming that they've got the same degree of capacity that they had prior to lockdown, it's really important to almost take that check to say, look, it's almost as if we're having to start over, and having to readjust for our degree of just lack of time behind the wheel, and the fact that we still remain incredibly vulnerable. And if we're all going to start to come and get onto the roads at the same time, well, obviously the degree of potential, risk will increase. It's part of our frustration that we haven't necessarily had the same chance that we've had previously to get into classrooms in terms of our workshops to be able to talk about these issues and have a chance to be able to work through with the Year 11s in terms of, what these risks look like and what they can do to take sort of some control and charge of it.
Because that's a really important part of it, not just the skills of being able to, you know, press down on the accelerator while you lift your foot off the clutch. It's the skills of being able to tell a mate, you know, stop texting while you're driving, or, you know, maybe you've had too much to drink, you're not allowed to drive. So that's a skill in itself. Laura Kemp is also a facilitator with Fit to Drive. Good morning, Laura. How do you teach kids to have those really tough conversations?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of us that work as facilitators for our program. We know that so many young people, including ourselves as facilitators, play a huge role in making these really important decisions on the road. And the social narrative often revolves around other peers kind of being involved in maybe risk-taking that can happen in cars. So we use a peer facilitation model because we realise that a lot of these young people in year 10, 11, 12, getting their learners and P-plates are really, really sensitive to everything that their peers say. So if we can open up conversations about, that's right, maybe what can we do if our mates are texting, or what we can we do if they're going to speed, and giving them a comfortable place to have a chat and go, yeah, we probably do need to come up with some ways or some phrases or some strategies to tell them that, I think it can really help them transition into the road. It's almost that gap that, as Brad and as you guys were saying, we look at skills through all their Vic Road stuff, but sometimes we don't have those conversations about behaviour. And I think in COVID, it's definitely had an impact on being able to go out and have those conversations. And, you know, as you said in the preview, there's those things that are really going to come up in schoolies and summer when we can see everyone again.
Laura and Brad, stay with us. Texts here. I know through my daughter that there are many kids that are falsifying their hours and special considerations to get their licence early. They say they need their licence to be able to get to work or to care for a relative, both of which are false. Robin's in Dandenong. Hi, Robin.
Morning, Rochelle. And can I say everyone?
What do you think? What do you think needs to change? Is there anything we need to consider once we open up for young drivers in particular?
Well, I'm thinking of the RACV L2P program and whether there's any opportunity, or whether we can create an opportunity perhaps for some sort of mentor program with experienced drivers taking on the young inexperienced. Do you know that one, Rochelle?
I can hear some nodding and agreement from Laura, so I'm going to handball that one to you, Laura. I mean, what about mentor programs or other programs that can be introduced so that we transition safely?
Yep. So I think the L2P programs have been really great, particularly for that physical driving experience, run through the councils, so you get that other licensed driver that is almost an instructor. But some of the other programs that I think we've missed out on are those face-to-face workshops that we do in school. There's also a lot of community programs that we do for parents and school-aged students, because obviously too, as you've just said, fostering that relationship between learner-driver and supervising driver. Again, all of our programs are peer facilitated, so we are the mentors really, or the advocates on behalf of these young people. I know that the reason why I became a peer facilitator is because I experienced all of these same things as everybody else, and I wanted to mentor others that, you know, I've been through some of these things that come up a lot as an inexperienced P-plater, so let's work through this together and I can give you some tips and we can talk about it.
Go for it, Brad. Yep.
Got it. We've got to say that the support we have in terms of what we do, you know, it's a multifaceted effort here, and it comes across all the road safety partners in Victoria. I mean, TAC have been amazing in terms of supporting us with our workshop delivery, as has Vic Roads or Road Safety Victoria these days. And in partnership with them, you know, we do the best that we can in terms of that incursion piece, which tries to deal with the behaviours, as Laura's indicated. But it's also the community, it's the local communities, it's the local partners. It's also Vic Police and Fire Rescue Victoria, who also are integral in terms of what we do in terms of talking to young people about, you know, the kinds of behaviours to look out when we talk about those distractions of speeding, wearing seatbelts, drugs and alcohol, and inexperience and fatigue. But it's a joint effort. As a minister indicated, Ben Carroll, you know, there's no silver bullet. I mean, if there was, in terms of dealing with lives lost and significant trauma, it would have been deployed a long time ago. So it's a constant state of vigilance and having to keep reinvesting in what we think we know and what we think we've learned over time. And you've got other guests on today who actually are really well-versed in terms of the progress we've made in that.
We'll actually be speaking to the TAC a little later in the program. Brad Crofts and Laura Kemp, both from Fit to Drive, are with you at the moment. We're talking about how we ensure that young people or people that are just learning to drive once lockdown lifts, that haven't driven much over the last couple of years, have those skills and that we don't see terrible accidents and crashes on our roads. Jeff says, when my son turned 18, he voted for the first time, borrowed my car for the first time and drove off to see his girlfriend. Now, that's scary. Brad, do we need to introduce some other subsidies, you know, maybe some hazard driving lessons or, you know, we spoke about mentorship, but maybe just driving lessons for those who haven't got the numbers up? What else can we look at?
Look, it's really, I think, again, just a matter of doing across the board what we do. And I think actually that already in official capacity, but in terms of making up the difference, Rochelle, as we indicated earlier, is to take that on, that personal responsibility, and also as a family and as a community, in terms of just looking out for each other during this time, in terms of transitioning back to a more normal, a more normal trajectory on our roads. I'm sure that the TAC may have a view in terms of how we might be able to adopt or adapt some of our programs in the way that might be able to assist in some of the gap filling. But I think we actually do know what the answers are in many ways in terms of, you know, what the right behaviours are. But having to, if you like, substitute for the fact that we haven't had the chance to do this as formally as we have, you know, up to this point, and take them on board at a personal, family, you know, local community level. And that's, you know, I think that that's what I'm seeing coming through, and also what some of the campaigning looks like in terms of Victoria Police are really, really focused at the moment in terms of schoolies coming up and, you know, having the chance to be able to get some key messages out to that group of young people before they take off. So there are things we can do, you know, in the immediate term, which don't necessarily mean we're moving all the pieces, but we can actually fill in a few of the gaps as a consequence of being, in the prolonged lockdown that we've been through.
Yeah, and I know we will be having a chat with the head of road safety at the TAC, the Transport Accident Commission, before midday. But just going to the text line, this one is from Annie. It says, "Hey there, my learner driver has lost all interest now with only about 40 hours to go, which must be a hard situation to be in. Have you got any tips or tricks just to get kids interested and or reinterested in driving, Laura?"
Yeah, I think maybe some of these little freedoms potentially might be encouraging. Maybe it's for them, if they're going to go to a picnic and see their mates, it's the little trips that make such a difference to your hours.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it can be, you know what, let's drive there together and you can get your hours to and from the picnic. Or, you know, if they've got a part-time or a casual job, it's, even if it's just at Macca's and it's 10 minutes away, just jump in the car and do that. It can make up that 40 hours. And even potentially just chatting about all the things that they want to do when we can travel further than our 15Ks, you know, if it's that they want to head down to the Great Ocean Road, well, making sure that, hey, if you want to do that in a few weeks, let's go for like a half hour drive to this essential place so that you can tick that off.
Yeah, really good advice.
Yeah.
Laura Kemp, Brad Crofts, both from Fit to Drive, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Rochelle. Jonathan.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
We're discussing learning to drive today and how we can make it a bit easier for kids and young people who are on their L's or P's and trying to get their full license just after lockdown ends, because it's the best part of 2 years, really, that lockdown has played a role in kids learning to drive. Should there be subsidised driving lessons? Should there be hazard reduction lessons, longer probation periods? Lou from Ballarat has sent one through saying, "It's been impossible in regional Victoria to get Vic Roads bookings. My daughter was 18 nearly 2 years ago and still no licence. So many kids falsifying hours and dealing with unscrupulous instructors. Was told to take her to Melbourne at one point for hazard testing," says Lou.
Yeah, there's lots of texts along those lines of falsifying, because 2 years, it's a long time, Jono, and in that period, if you're an L plater or a P plater, that's a long time, and those rules change significantly about what you can and can't do within that period. So once lockdown lifts and these people are out on the roads, you know, unfortunately, there will be ramifications.
Yeah, and I remember last year there was a 17-year-old from Frankston who was handed a fine for, she was an L plater and going and doing some driving practice. And that really highlighted the difference in approach between Victoria and New South Wales. So in Victoria, you're not allowed to go out and just do driving practice for the sake of doing driving practice, but you can if you're going somewhere, if you were going to do the shopping or going to school or whatever. But in New South Wales, they interpreted it differently. In New South Wales, they said, well, you, that's a form of training and you can't get that at home, so you need to go out and do it. So it just kind of highlights the differences.
There's texts here. We've noticed a worrying trend amongst 18-year-olds. They're putting off getting their licence until they don't have to do the 120 hours practice. I find that quite disturbing. And there's no substitute for time behind the wheel. Every time I'm travelling with my 17-year-old, I get him to drive. It's an investment in his future. He now has 275 hours logged and he's very competent, comfortable and aware when driving. I encourage every parent to do the same. Mark's in Belgrave. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi, guys.
What do you think?
I think one of the biggest problems is parents teaching their drivers and inculcating their own bad habits. I used to be a defensive driving instructor and high-performance driving instructor. And as I drive around the roads, I see no one seems to have an understanding of road courtesy. People sort of, I'm in this lane and I own it now. I really think we're not doing it particularly well at the moment.
Yeah, road courtesy is interesting.
What can we change, Mark?
Going back to the Stone Ages, when I was young, the road laws used to say, you know, stay to the left unless overtaking, which meant the traffic flowed freely and people didn't, in general, have to dodge around and swap lanes. Nowadays, people wander all over the road like a... road. On the freeways, people will be doing 80 k's in the outside lane and they will not move. You know, like it used to be pretty simple. In Germany, if you're in the wrong lane, that's a massive fine.
And we've had similar conversations, Mark, too, just I think what you mentioned there, just road and driving courtesy and just the level of road rage that seems to be up at the moment as well, which probably signifies just the level of frustration as Victorians that we're all feeling, and it's coming out on our roads, which is the last place that we want to see it. Mark, it's been really good to get your perspective as well. Samantha Cofield is the head of road safety at the TAC. Sam, we've been talking about our concerns when it comes to young drivers who for the last pretty much 2 years haven't had a lot of experience. We've had curfews, so there's no driving at night. We've had limits of between 5 to 20k radiuses, so no long drives. Is this something that the TAC is concerned about?
Good morning, Michelle and Jono. Yes, look, we are concerned that young people, do actually start to get out on the road as soon as possible. I think your earlier callers and talkback guests have hit on some of the issues for us, and while we are allowed to be a learner for the 5 permitted reasons, that does sort of limit particularly what those in the Melbourne metropolitan areas have actually been able to do in terms of driving practice. But what we do know is that 120 hours is the most important thing in terms of getting a licence and being safe once you're actually a solo driver, that we can do as learners, but also as parents or carers for our young people. So,
Sam, we've
really
had so
important.
Many people, though, texting in about that, about how people are getting around it, whether it's just postponing and waiting, whether it's falsifying records. I mean, are you hearing anything similar?
Not really. Look, there's a couple of things. The waiting isn't really a problem. In Victoria and, in fact, internationally, we're seeing licensing age getting older. So, and one of the really positive things about that is with general maturity, so the older we get and the more mature we are generally and the more life experience we have, the safer we become naturally on the road as well as in other parts of our life. So there's no major issue in terms of waiting. And I think what you might be talking about is waiting so you don't need to get the 120 hours or even in relation to, say, falsification. The really positive thing when we brought in the new graduated licensing system into Victoria, which was in 2007-2008, is we also changed the probationary test to actually reflect the amount of experience and practice you get with 120 hours. So it's not easy to pass the license test if you actually don't have that experience. It all works together to make sure when we get on the road, we can be as safe as possible.
So for people like Rish and I who are a little bit worried about what's going to happen leading into summer when we've got schoolies, we've got big events and people finishing school and wanting to celebrate and this huge pent-up demand to celebrate and socialise and see people and there'll be alcohol and drugs involved and all that sort of stuff. And we know that overseas from Connecticut, there's been some studies done showing that the crash rate does increase after stay-at-home orders are lifted. So what can you tell us to kind of ease our concerns?
A few things in that. First of all, I'd say comparing ourselves to the US isn't probably the best place to compare ourselves because they have a very young licensing age there. So their people are less mature. And the graduated licensing program we have in Victoria is pretty much gold standard in the world. And that's not so much in the US. So it's a very different program in terms of getting licensing. I think for those who don't already have a license, so they're on a learner permit, the really important thing is for parents and carers who are giving that practice, know that your young people have had a significant break. Go back a few steps, but make sure that you start to get that practice in and gradually build it up again to where it was and then take off from there. They're probably not such a big concern, those people, if they're not already driving. And we do have very good compliance. We don't get many people driving without a licence. For those who have a licence, it's fairly similar. When we're young and we're very early, particularly in our first year of licensing, we're still really building up our experience as a solo driver. We're building up things like hazard perception skills and you're looking out for dangers. And that's one of the reasons we have a peer passenger restriction. So when you're on your first year, your red peas, you can only have one peer passenger. So that's really protective and making sure that, you know, it is harder to sort of, we call it have a party in the car or, you know, go to parties in groups. So we still recommend doing things like, you know, catching public transport there and maybe organising a parent or a share ride vehicle to get home.
Are we unfairly stereotyping young people here, though? There's been a couple of texts saying that we are, or should we be more concerned about young people getting behind the wheel?
I think we are a little bit. Young people overarchingly do the right thing. We've long-term had zero BAC for probationary drivers in Victoria, and we know overarching young people do the right thing. Same with things like keeping within the speed limits. They're trying to do the right thing. Often when they do the wrong thing, this is not so much with alcohol, but particularly with speed, it's because of inexperience rather than because they're actually knowingly breaking the law. We know this is for the majority of people, you know, even for older people, often we're really trying to do the right thing. We're just making some small mistakes and sometimes those mistakes don't end up very well for us.
Samantha Cofield, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Head of Road Safety at the TAC. There's a text here from Anonymous, and if you ever needed a message to get through, this is pretty much it. Please, please, please stress the importance of not giving in to peer pressure, standing up and saying no. I recently lost a very young family member in a one car accident. Another family lost a son in the same accident. The driver who lied about her driving status survived. Two young lives lost forever, and a young girl who has to live with cancer. killing her friends. I mean, that's the reality of it there. I mean, and we know, and we spoke about this off air, Jono. It doesn't look, every part of my body is just reacting to that text. Yep. Young people will make stupid decisions. We know that. And it's not, you know, whether or not those decisions become more frequent after lockdown is yet to be determined. So that will forever happen. I guess what we're trying to do at the moment is just talk about how much inexperience has there been over the last couple of years. And is that one thing that maybe we can tweak, that we can change, whether it be subsidies for lessons or hazard tests or, I mean, there's lots of texts here throwing it back to the school saying bring back driver's ed at school. I mean, we always get schools to try and solve everything for us, but that's something that's coming up as well.
Yeah, and this text along that line saying back when I was at secondary school, we were part of a pre-driver education for year 11. It covered maintaining, purchasing a car, behaviour and road rules, culminating in some driving practice in an empty car park. Thought it was a great program before getting your license. So should we be moving back to something like that? 1300 222 774. And I certainly remember learning to drive in Bairnsdale, and it was quite quiet, you know, lots of spaces, big open roads. And then once I had to go to Melbourne for uni, very, very different traveling. Even some of the kind of arterial roads, I remember driving down Pasco Vale Road and getting a little bit frightened by what was going on.
Oh, yeah, there. I still do. I didn't get my license till really late in life. There's a text here that says I'm a 42-year-old male. I don't drive and I feel ashamed about it. Please don't. I didn't get my license till later in life. It is more expensive, though, because you do need to pay for lessons, because generally, well, let's just say I wouldn't be married to my husband right now if I let him continue to try and teach me how to drive. It didn't go well, Jono.
Marie is in Benalla. Good morning, Marie. What's your situation?
Good morning. We decided that we would pay for our grandchildren to have paid lessons, three paid lessons, before they started to drive with their parents.
Is that because you didn't trust your children, their parents' driving capabilities?
Well, I just thought we all have bad habits.
Yeah.
And
it's stressful trying to teach someone to drive, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think that gets the children over being panic, and it helps with the parents.
Fair. And how are they going?
So they've both sailed through very easily on first time with their license.
There you go. You've done well, Marie. Well played.
Yes. I reckon that. Well, yeah, I think it's good. It's a good Christmas present. It's a good anything, or get the government to subsidise three lessons for these children who have gone through 2 years of a year 11, 12.
Okay. Thank you, Marie. Jim is in a car. I don't know where that car is. Jim, what are your thoughts?
G'day. Look, I'm fortunate enough to drive a fairly small ute, a truck, and I also have a motorbike license. I agree with the bloke who's on before talking about sort of the defensive driving. I don't think it would hurt if somehow as part of your license in a totally controlled situation have maybe a half day session in a small truck and just on a motorbike around a small course, just to get the feel of what a large vehicle like, and that they can't just stop, you know, as quick as a car, and the fact that a motorbike is virtually unseen. I think that'd be very useful.
I don't know how many people would be willing to get on a motorcycle, Jim, but I get your point in that we sort of need to, well, put ourselves in other people's shoes, but we also need to understand the hazards as well. Should this be subsidised? I mean, who's going to pay for this? Driving lessons are expensive.
Well, I mean, when I did my truck license, it was only $300 for a three-day course, really. So, you know, it wouldn't be much. And it'd be all on a driving range, so even if you're on a just a small truck, which is, you know, open, you have full vision, no box on the back or anything, and even just on a small scooter, just to get the feel of, you know, what a motorbike is like, you know, compared to driving in traffic in normal cars, and everyone sort of thinks that they're bulletproof.
Yeah, and you get to see life or life on the road from a different perspective. Jim, thank you for that idea. If you've got an idea like Jim's, or it might be, you know, a variation on a theme, 1300 222-774 if you would like to call through, or you can text to 0437-774-774. How do we make sure that our young people post-lockdown are happy, safe, confident on the roads? What do you think? Associate Professor Stuart Newstead might have a few ideas here. He is Associate Director of Monash University's Accident Research Centre, and he leads the centre's injury analysis and data team. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are we going to see on our roads after lockdown ends?
Well, it's going to be a variety of things. Firstly, if we're talking about novice drivers, in Victoria there's been a huge hiatus in the availability of training because we haven't actually been able to get professional lessons during those lockdown periods. So there's 250 plus days now in the last 2 years that it's actually been quite inaccessible. So it may actually have quite a negative impact on being able to get professional training, as some of those previous callers were asking for. It's actually very difficult to find a driving instructor at the moment.
Gosh, so, I mean, is there anything tangible that we can do? I mean, it's only a matter of weeks before we will be able to travel long distances, that inexperienced drivers will be able to travel long distances and drive at night and all of the things that we haven't been able to do. What are some small changes that could be made, do you think?
Well, it's really hard to know exactly what is going to work in this context because, say, the system itself has such a backlog. Most of those young people who would have been sort of getting their licence towards the end of the school year, or if haven't got it already, there's going to be quite a backlog, I understand, in actually getting a licence test to be booked in, as well as those professional lessons you need. So a lot of people, a lot of kids will be relying on their parents for their training. Now, that happens anyway, because within 120 hours you have to have a lot of parental input. I would certainly encourage parents to try and book a number of professional lessons with their children, and perhaps just to be patient in getting through the system. You need to get the hours up. It's absolutely mandatory because the research has absolutely demonstrated that those 120 hours make a big difference to your initial risk anyway, and being patient to wait for the lessons, the testing after that. But certainly for those who have been in the system and may not have had that driving experience, certainly being involved with parents still as second sets of eyes as they get back into driving and get that experience, and to go out with their parents if possible or other experienced drivers as co-pilots, and to have that assistance as they get back into driving.
Yeah, and hopefully not pick up the bad habits of their parents. Decker is in Shepparton. Good morning, Decker. What are your thoughts?
Good morning. It's actually Peter, but I'm just talking that Decker training complex Shepparton, it still is in heavy vehicles. In year 11 and year 12, going back some 25 years ago, it was part of the school curriculum, and they could take these young children out there and they could teach them. They could even educate them on the skid pan, how to handle a car when it's skidding and not get out of control and go across the road like it does in a lot
it's
of
almost
these
like
places.
Hazard sort of driving. Decker, I want to just quickly put that to Stuart. I mean, how do you feel about the school picking up the slack here? This is quite a few people have said this. Has the school got enough on their plate? Can they handle, you know, defensive driving as well?
I think the short answer is no. The school curriculums are so stretched, and the resources and picking up the pieces of all the lost education in the last 2 years are going to be a huge demand anyway. I'm thinking trying to put that into the school curriculum, I really think it is up to the parents and the system to try and accommodate outside of that. And when you talk about on road skills training, it's not the absolute priority for a novice driver anyway. What is a priority is getting supervised skill to detect hazards, to moderate behaviour, to behave safely on the road. The actual physical control of the car is not the thing that really makes the difference with novice drivers. It's about their behaviour and attitude to driving and hazard and skill perception.
Well, that's what strikes me about this, is because you can do the 120 hours and get up the physical skills of driving, but then that it's a different scenario when there might be other people in the car and they're telling you to do things, or
music's up, and you're laughing, or
you're using a phone. That's the other thing. Like, how do you have that conversation with someone to say you really shouldn't be using a phone, right? Like, how do you have the willpower as a young person to say that, to have that conversation with your friend Because that's not being taught, really, is it?
Well, I think that there's lots of rules for red P-platers anyway about not using phones and peer passenger restrictions. One of the dangers we've got are those people who have gone through that red P period without actually having much experience because they've been locked down and now getting to a point where those restrictions start to ease with not having the experience by themselves to develop their skills independently. And that's why I think the idea of actually getting parents and others involved in the driving process as they readapt to it is probably going to be quite important. But how we can possibly legislate that and police it, if you like, is a really difficult question.
Associate Professor Stuart Newstead, thanks so much for your time.
No problem at all.
He's the Associate Director of Monash University Accident Research Centre, leading the centre's injury analysis and data team. Texty is saying problematic that rural youth go for their licence locally and that are allowed to drive in Melbourne and vice versa. Huge difference between Bendigo and Melbourne CBD. Hey, let's try and squeeze in Anita. She's called from Pacheepla East. What has your local community done?
Hi, it's Anita and, oh, sorry, it's Pichalba East.
Thank
Pichalba
you. I've
East.
Stuffed it's both okay. up there, so at least I've done it well.
Yeah, no,
Anita,
okay.
What did you want to share with us just quickly before we head to the news?
Yeah. Listen, it's similar to what that gentleman just said, but back in 2012 when my daughter actually did get a licence and we spent a lot of hours on the road because I lived in Lancefield, the actual local op shop and community, whatever profits they got, they actually gave the children a defensive driving course. That was the best thing for my daughter in particular. She learned how to sit correctly. She learned what to do if something did come on the road. She learned if she got a flat, what to do. And just the skills that she actually got was amazing.
Isn't that wonderful? And I love it. And we learn so much about our communities, Jono, don't we, when we talk about, you know, where does solutions lie? And quite often they are locally. And like Anita said, you know, if you've got Lions clubs or Rotaries or local op shops, they can sometimes generate, you know, $50,000 annually, a local op shop, especially if I'm in the area and able to throw some money around and pick up some garments or two. But to be able to put that money maybe back into defensive driving lessons for young people, that's a great initiative.
I think it is a great idea, but it's also, I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that it's not just defensive driving and the physical skill of driving, it's the ability to resist peer pressure as well and the ability to have those really tough conversations. Lots of people on the text line, Peter called through about DECA in Shepparton and the driver training that was done there. Lots of people saying, yes, I learnt to drive at DECA back in the 90s. Great program. This one says, I did driver training at DECA as part of year 11 in Shepparton. Just like that caller said, it's been invaluable for me. Thank you for your text. And also reiterating what you were saying before, Rish, people are super impatient and strange on the roads at the moment.
Strange is one way to describe people at the moment. Hey, we've done shows similar to this, looking at the conditions of our roads, learning to drive regionally as well, and how we share our roads. So there's multiple programs on this. The best thing to do is subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast. Go back through our feeds if this is something that is of interest to you.
If you've missed some of the conversation today, or you've been listening and thinking, oh, look, I know someone who really should listen to this, you can get this on podcast. The Conversation Hour is available wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Listen app.
And you can always email us as well if you have a person or an idea that you'd like to share with us. Our email address, conversationhour@abc.net.au. Till we speak to you next time, take care and speak soon.